Best-selling author Lionel Shriver doesn't write stories about noble characters who breeze through adversity without breaking a sweat, and her readers thank her for it. And her books include Big Brother and We Need to Talk About Kevin. And Shriver's 15th novel takes on a trifecta of hot-button topics, including chasing immortality, gender, and race. In the new novel, a long marriage is strained when one of them becomes obsessed with exercise. Ring any bells out there? It's called The Motion of the Body Through Space. And Lionel Shriver joins me now from London. Hi there.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great, nice to chat to you. Lockdown has eased a little in London, although it's still going. You said that the virus has shaken you, but not because you might get sick. What disturbs you most about this moment in history?
I'm nervous about what it's doing to the world economy. So a lot of people seem to think that we're in the hard part now, and I beg to differ. I'm afraid that the worst is yet to come. And it won't be fun.
Do you feel there's too much consensus about what the right action is at the moment?
I'm definitely concerned that these lockdowns internationally were not considered beforehand. And there's been a kind of creepy consensus. I'm especially uncomfortable with the union of government and the media. Both in the UK and the US, and I won't speak for Australia or New Zealand. The media really spouts the government line, and I think that's a little dangerous. We need the media to call the government to account and to question government policy, and especially over here, the only way in which government policy has been criticized is that the lockdown wasn't soon enough, and it's not going to last long enough.
You are eager to point out that for most people, the lockdown won't be the hard part.
I went for a walk today in London, and I was looking at all these businesses, and I had no idea how many of them were going to ever be back. You know, many of them actually have plywood over the windows, and I just wonder whether I'm looking at a landscape that is if not permanent, semi-permanent, or long-term. You know, I'm also worried about a whole generation graduating from university with very few prospects.
There's been a lot of focus on the moment, on how we get through this moment, the pandemic, but you have thought quite far into the future. In fact, you've written about it. You've written dystopian fiction about the breakdown of society that comes from economic collapse. In fact, you even wrote about the rush for toilet paper before it was real. How did you know that people were going to buy so much toilet paper?
I know, that was The Mandibles. That was my previous novel. And it's about the economic collapse of the United States when the value of the dollar collapses. When your currency goes, so does your country. And I have no idea what prescience visited me in writing that manuscript, but one of the early signs of popular panic is that they start hoarding toilet paper, and you can't find it in any shop. You know, my characters go, you know, 50 miles out from New York City looking for loo roll and can't find it. So I don't know why everyone doesn't just get a bidet, but...
an expensive but permanent solution to the toilet paper shortage. In a column for The Spectator.
I was just going to add that having written a whole book about what real economic collapse is like, and I tried to make it as detailed and personal and on the ground as possible. It's not an abstraction. So this is about a family, and that used to have some real wealth that they were waiting to receive from an elderly relative, and that just vanishes. It somehow, having gone through that exercise, makes the prospect of economic collapse much more real to me, and there's just nothing good about it, right? I suppose if you're some kind of Marxist or something, you might get gratification in watching all the rich people be poor too. But it's just, it's dismal, and it's kind of eventless. It's not exciting. It's deadening and sad. And you just watch people who have talent and would in another situation be thriving, doing menial labor and barely surviving. It's though you wouldn't expect it. It's a funny book, and I had a ball writing it, but I don't want it to manifest itself in real life. I have a funny feeling that it's not as humorous when it's a proper depression outside the window and not just between the covers of a book.
I want to talk about the new book, of course, but before that, I just need to ask you, how did America get to a point where wearing a face mask became a political statement?
Well, isn't that one of the weird things that this pandemic has brought about? It became politicized very early on. And yeah, you're right. In the United States right now, if you wear a mask, then you hate Trump. And there is nothing about the epidemiological efficacy of wearing a mask that has anything to do with being Republican or supporting Trump personally or his policies. I mean, they couldn't be less connected. So it doesn't make any sense that's the way it's worked, that now the left in the United States supports the lockdowns. Well, it's crazy on a host of levels. It used to be, at least, that the left was supportive of liberty. And furthermore, the lockdowns are hardest on the very communities that the left is most concerned about, and rightly so, rightly concerned. So it's crazy, right? And over here in the UK, same crazy, because Remainers are pro lockdown. There's no connection. Well, there is absolutely no connection between what is the optimal social response to this particular disease and membership of the European Union.
I'm speaking with Lionel Shriver, whose new novel is called The Motion of the Body Through Space. And there are two central characters in that book, Remington, who's forced to retire after an incident with his superior at the office, and his wife, Serenata, who was a runner and her knees have given out. Now, Remington decides to run a marathon. You've been a runner. Is he running for health or vanity or for some other reason?
Well, I don't want to tell the reader, because I think that the reader can infer what's going on with Remington. It's meant to be a little complicated. But I think he feels he has something to prove. He left his previous job in ignominious circumstances, and he was humiliated. And so he's trying to get his manhood back in a kind of, in the book is questioning whether this is the right way to go about it. There's something about the nature of endurance sport, and this is especially the case. He not only runs a marathon, but then he gets involved in the triathlon movement, which is even more extreme. And that movement is very classically one that exalts masculine values, traditionally masculine values of stoicism and a refusal to give in to pain and defying your limits, and it's all about strength and power. And so you can see why someone who feels unmanned would be attracted to that movement. But the book and his wife are suspicious that this method of self-redemption is not going to work.
Do you agree with her when she calls it a cult?
It definitely has cult-like aspects. I was interested in this book to look at the whole phenomenon of our increasing obsession with exercise and fitness. And I think it has religious aspects. There's a way in which the adulation of suffering is very, very much like traditional religions, and Catholicism in particular. And the vilification of the flesh, the overcoming the tawdry body with the greater powers of the spirit. And there is a kind of religious dedication that people who get really fanatical about exercise tend to display. I mean, it is a kind of devotion. And I think the concern is that as a religion, it's a little impoverished. Ultimately, the religion is very narcissistic. It's about the adulation of the self, and in even more reductive terms, it's about the adulation of the body. It's turning the body into a kind of idol.
And, you know, her Serenata ran instead of spending time with her kids, and now her husband is spending all hours training. I wonder if running is a selfish act.
Well, don't get me wrong. This is not a book or an author anti-exercise, but it's trying to keep the pursuit in proportion. So I regard exercise as a mechanical business, and it's an important mechanical business in the same way that keeping oil in your car is important, or in the same way that, you know, it's a kind of housekeeping. You know, so I would compare it to, you know, vacuuming the rug, keeping the house tidy, keeping your body is your house. So you live in it. And it's a good idea to keep it functional. And therefore, taking it for a run around the block is a good idea. You know, if you do the same thing with a car to keep the battery charged, it's very similar. But it's not a noble calling. It's selfish in a good way, you know, in that it allows your body to keep to let you do other things besides exercise. There are some people who get so involved with this, what to me is a mechanical running it around the block, that that's all they do, and therefore that is the purpose. That is your higher purpose, is running around. And I mean, if that does it for you, okay, but it sure doesn't do it for me.
The book is not all about running, of course. Remington runs because he loses his job after a clash with a less qualified African-American woman who is his boss. And Serenata loses voice over work because doing other accents is deemed problematic. Now, Lionel, you got in hot water in Brisbane a few years ago for saying that you hoped concerns about cultural appropriation would be a passing fad. I wonder, did you go there intentionally in this book?
Oh, there's an element of mischief. There's a little inset section in the book which I knew my critics would go crazy over, and I couldn't resist. I mean, it's there for a reason. Remington needs to be motivated to get into this exercise fanaticism, and so, you know, this is a classic use of a backstory. What I did that was most dangerous is that I created an unattractive black character, and there is now an unwritten rule that white writers may not write unattractive characters of other races. That there are a lot of people who now think that white writers shouldn't be able to create any characters of any race or of a different gender or a different sexual orientation than the author. So, but if you are going to create characters who are different from yourself, they have to be nice. You know, that's just the understanding. Now, I reject that out of hand. I actually think this anxiety about, you know, the character, if you're going to make a minority character, then it has to be terribly attractive. I think that's I actually think that's kind of racist. That is, it's it's condescending. I mean, we're all people. We all have flaws. There are dislikable people in every race. And therefore, to treat your character, your minority characters, with kid gloves is not treating those characters like real people.
And where are you concerned that it will lead if the obsession with diversity and cultural appropriation is taken too far?
Well, the whole identity politics movement seems to be leading us toward a more antagonistic and adversarial world, which I regret. I'm old enough to remember the civil rights movement in the U.S., and at that time, the idea was, look, we're all people, we're all basically the same, we all deserve the same rights, and so let's break down these barriers between groups, which mean that we're not really able to see each other. And now the ambition seems quite the opposite. It's all about drawing strict distinctions and clinging to the group, whatever group you were born into, as the centermost aspect of your identity. And I find that reductive. I find it regrettable. What would you think of me, really, if I told you the most important thing to me about my life was that I was born white? I mean, that would be incredibly offensive. So I think it's offensive on behalf of anybody. I mean, all the categories into which I was born, I've always tried to get out of, or to at least to expand the boundaries of. I happen to have been born female, but I really enjoy in my work exploring being men and being boys in the fiction. And that's a way of getting out. I was born in the United States. I didn't choose to be American. None of us choose our nationalities to begin with anyway. But I left the U.S. and now I live in the U.K. I didn't necessarily accept that particular box. I like the idea of people getting outside of these boxes, and not in themselves, and also in terms of the way they look at other people. And the identity politics movement is all about the preservation of boxes. And that's my main problem with it. And it also means that it's encouraging all of us to think of ourselves primarily in terms of the characteristics with which we were born. And that doesn't allow for personal growth, and it leads to stereotypes and atomized society. And I think that atomization, we have enough of it already, and I would like us to feel more united. I would like to break down barriers between people, and I would like us to get a lot less super sensitive about matters relating to gender and race, etc.
Yeah, and exploring those issues and ideas would have probably been enough for this novel. And yet you go further to add an extra layer of interest, because Serenata says that women, quote, can claim to be traumatized by a hand on our knee when helplessness is politically useful. And does that tell us something about how you feel about the hashtag Me Too movement?
Well, I have an ambivalent relationship to the Me Too movement because, when it first came along with the whole Harvey Weinstein thing, I was supportive, of course, he seemed like a creep. And there were some other creeps that were exposed, and I thought that was good. I'm certainly not any kind of a supporter of sexual harassment in the workplace. But it seemed to progress to a pettier realm rather quickly. And, these are related issues in terms of the identity politics thing. I would also like to see us break down the barriers between men and women. And I am not someone who clings very much to being female in terms of how I think of myself. And I found that the Me Too movement was encouraging women to have an adversarial relationship to men. And, you know, I'm very happily married, and I don't have an adversarial relationship to men. And I think it's a happier life.
What's next for you? Although you may not fully support the lockdown, I wonder if it's been a good time to be working on a next novel.
It has been. I mean, I wrote a new book in 4 months.
Hmm.
It needs a little touch-up, but that's the fastest first draft I've ever put together. So in some ways, the lockdown is one of the best things that ever happened to me. I mean, that said, it's not all that different for me because I already work at home. I already spend huge amounts of time by myself. I just, you know, and I'm a little lukewarm on parties and big social gatherings anyway, so I've been able to get out of them. So mm-hmm. I don't mind that much.
Do you worry or would you be worried if your politics lost you readers?
I would be disappointed. I think it's not necessary to share my politics to enjoy my books. And you know, the politics definitely take a back seat to the emotional relationships between the characters and the story. And so if you have a somewhat different perspective on the world than I do, which is fine, that doesn't mean that you are necessarily not going to enjoy my novels. And besides which, you know, novels have often take on an issue with multiple perspectives on that issue. And so I think fiction is capable of looking at current affairs in fact, more complexity than nonfiction can. If nothing else, a novel can include contradictions in a way that nonfiction doesn't allow you to.
I've really enjoyed talking to you. Lionel Shriver's new book is called The Motion of the Body Through Space. Thanks for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Oh, I enjoyed talking to you. Until the next book, then.